It is Saturday, June 30th, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, Sony Blu-ray technology.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we talked with Bob DeMuli from Sony about Blu-ray technology and their internal drives now available. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can contact us right now. Go to geekspeak.org. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, Slacker Geek and student, and Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Hi, geeks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Sean, I saw you snicker. I mess up everybody's names, and you always give me a hard time about it.
Oh, don't give him such a hard time. I was snickering at you, too.
Oh, thanks. It's Bob, I feel loved by both of you.
Bob DeMuli. Bob DeMuli from Sony.
That's me.
At least he's not. Oh, he's here. Oh, man. Okay, so.
He's awesome. So,
now you
got to
look him
in
the eye. You got to look at him as he
and Lyle, don't
burns holes
everybody
into
butchers
you.
My name. Don't feel bad.
Do you hear
at
that,
all.
You guys? Everybody butchers.
If your last name was Smith, Lyle would butcher it.
Smythe.
Smythe.
And it actually is Miller. I mean, it's French for Miller, right?
DeMuli means Miller in French.
Nah, I'm going to start calling you Miller. No, so so we're going to get with you in a minute, Bob, to talk about Sony Blu-ray technology. But first, we're going to talk about the Week in Geek news segment, like what's going on in technology. Miles, I'm going to start with you, sir.
One thing that was of interest this week is some bugs in Intel's processors, their core processors. This is different from, say, a operating system bug or an application bug in that it's in hardware. It's something it's harder to work around. Now, one of the ways that we can work around it, there have been many bugs here. I mean, this is in the, something like 67 bugs, something on that level. It's normal for processors to have some bugs. Many of you may remember the bugs we had back with the original Pentium. There was a floating point math bug.
I remember talking about, like, there was a big deal that there was a bug in the hardware on floating point math.
Right.
And then it was very clear that it didn't really affect much stuff.
Right. That, and normally when you're affecting the bugs in processors, you're going to issue a BIOS update. One of the problems with that, of course, is that most people have a hard time updating their computer, let alone updating the BIOS.
Everybody but Sean has trouble updating their BIOS, actually.
Basically.
You know, it's not as easy. A lot of motherboard manufacturers do have a Windows update tool that makes it easier, but you still have to dig in their website to get it.
And you have to know to do it.
And you have to know how to do it.
I remember following your instructions one time, Sean. You're like, you got to update the BIOS. The new BIOS is better. I'm like, okay, this is when I was in LA, when you were at Boot Magazine, a long time ago. So I'm like, okay, I'll go through this. And one of the things is you got to boot from DOS. I'm like, I'll just go into DOS prompt. No, you don't want to do that.
No.
I killed my chip. I had to mail it off to somebody and have it re-zap. But okay, so what's wrong with this processor? What's the bug?
Well, many of the bugs are just little minor errata. No big deal. There are a few of them, though, that are the equivalent of a hardware buffer overflow possibility.
Oh, interesting.
Ones that it would not be easy for an operating system to block. So a user space program could actually trigger them. Or at least that's some of the rumors that have been going around. So the write protect and the non-execute bits that have been coming into the new processors that are supposed to help with this are not going to deter that.
So now the virus protection software companies are going to have to look at possibly hardware breaches as well as the software concerns?
Assuming they catch it in time,
Because you could write an application that looked totally viable from the operating system's perspective, and on that hardware, it would cause a security hole.
Well, really what you're talking about is we're going back just a couple of years, because before processors had the write bit, when the processor did not have a write bit disabled.
The operating system had to handle all security anyway, so...
So it's not the end of the world. It just means make sure that you download... when you're downloading stuff, make sure you're downloading the correct thing. Make sure you're not using Internet Explorer to browse your web.
So the long and the short of it is we're seeing hardware bugs that are causing potential security vulnerabilities.
Right, and this also does affect the... for example, the MacBook Pro sitting in front of me.
And
because it has an Intel Core processor.
Man. Well, good thing AMD's there making such amazing
core
product.
Core Q processor, I should say.
Sorry. Okay, thank you, Miles, for that update. I'm assuming that Intel's going to focus on this and next revs of chips are not going to have these problems?
I would assume so.
Okay, because they're going to get a press about this. They're going to get bad press about this. It's interesting that, well, we won't get into that. I think we're going to go to the next news story. Thank you, Miles, so much for that. I appreciate it. Mr. Cleveland.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to talk a little about AMD's announcement that their next generation Barcelona, codenamed Barcelona, we don't know what the real name will be until they announce it, will be coming out in August.
Is this the four-core thing?
Yeah, this will be their first quad-core chip, native quad-core chip. In fact, it'll be the first native quad-core chip in the industry.
I thought Intel already had one.
They have a quad-core chip, but it's actually two dual-core chips slammed together.
Okay.
So when those two of the cores want to need to talk to...
each other, they have to go back to the
They don't really
bus.
Talk to each other. But they actually, the front side bus feeds data to each of those two cores.
Okay, so
whereas AMD's chip is, it's native in that the cores, yes, they all kind of are connected together internally.
Has anybody seen these chips? Have there been benchmarks?
Oh, yeah, there's, you can go to dailytech.com, news.com has stuff on this. I'm sure you're probably going to start seeing previews from the big sites on ONTech and HardOCP. I don't really want to talk about performance just because it's all speculative at this point.
Sure.
No one really knows. No one can really talk about it.
Can you talk
AMD
about
AMD is saying it's going to be awesome. And
is
maybe
this
it
important?
Will be.
Is this important for AMD?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult for them because it's only coming out at a lower speed, so up to 2 gigahertz. You're not going to see anything higher than that or their special edition quad-core chips until the fourth quarter. That's when I really think performance is going to make a difference for them.
You see a lot of this kind of leapfrogging with the two processor companies doing this kind of work where somebody will release something and somebody else will release something and they kind of jump over each other. Is AMD doing that with this quad-core? Is it going to be better than everything else that Intel has?
I think they hope so. There's just for saying it will be better.
Okay, so we'll wait and see.
But, the longer they wait, the tougher it's going to be because Intel's got their next generation quad-core chip coming out.
My kind of limited perspective on it is that Intel's doing amazingly well in the processor space right now. And AMD's
I don't think,
hurting.
I don't think anyone expected core.
Bugs notwithstanding.
Yeah, they're doing really well. And, all we can hope is that AMD keeps the pressure on, right? Because it affects pricing and it's better for us when there's competition.
Okay, enough processor news. Let's do a little bit more. I appreciate that Intel and AMD story. That was really cool. Miles got another news story that's not a processor?
Yes, I do.
Go for it.
Day of Silence on the Internet took place on June 26th. What this was is...
I didn't know about that ahead of time.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been convenient to tell us beforehand? Sorry, go on.
I didn't know about it beforehand. This is the first chance
good,
I had to talk
good,
about it.
Good.
But it was raising awareness for the increased royalties that were going to be levied upon Internet radio broadcasters, especially the smaller ones. And so basically all of them... minus a couple of large ones, which caused some controversy in and of itself, went dark on June 26th just as a show of this is what you're losing.
Right.
If this is important to you, you need to...
Okay, this is actually something we've been bad about not talking about.
Oh, we talked about it a few times.
We have,
but
recently, there's been this great news information from a listener saying, hey, talk about online or streaming rights, basically. Mm-hmm. And... we've kind of dropped the ball on that. So can you give us a little upshot of why is this giant producers of content and streaming media radio stations, if you will, why are they doing this? Like what is their
Well, for the most part they're not giant. Right. For the most part they're smaller items or smaller vendors such as pandora.com, live365.com.
pandora.com. I mean, I know a lot of people listen to that.
Right. Pandora being that it doesn't give you the same song. It gives you songs that are like that. It exposes you to a lot of different musics you wouldn't normally have.
Kind of like what KOSP does.
Kind of like what KOSP does. And the idea is that the royalty rates have been raised dramatically. Not only do they pay more than terrestrial radio stations. In fact, terrestrial radio stations sometimes are paid to play the music. They pay currently. They already pay twice as much as satellite radio per song.
Why? Because satellite radio is
because they can be charged it.
Okay,
it's a new field. Internet radio is a new distribution method, and one thing that an established market would fear is a new distribution method, because what music industry does is control the distribution through music stores, you know, Tower Records or Musicland.
And we covered a few of these news stories. Like, the basic issue is that the price will go up so high, and in the way that the way the logging of songs will take place, all of a sudden a small little radio station, online radio station, could get hit with a massive bill that would kill them.
Right.
So that kind of liability with the new regs that are trying to get in place would basically mean they'd have to go off air.
It's a combination of a few things. One, you have to pay per person or per listener per song. In other words, it's per performance per user.
Right.
And so let's say you have a small internet radio station that only has, you know, 10 users, no big deal, because each one is only going to be costing you 5/1000th of a cent, something
right.
like that. And then one day someone says, hey, this is really good on a popular site. You know, MSNBC says, hey, this is a great thing. It has some resources. It's a diamond in the rough. And suddenly they get tens of thousands of hits. They are now out of pocket. They have to.
Right. You know, and even if they had some kind of advertising model in there, they had an advertiser that was going to give money. Once it jumps up to a certain amount, the advertiser's out of that contract. I mean, they've already gone through all the ads they have. So there's no revenue coming in to off balance this higher cost. And with the way the internet works, with the whole dot, you know, the for a long time we used to get hit on geekspeak.org with slash dot effect, which tons of traffic hits us. And of course, our bandwidth wasn't costing us very much, so that kind of hit didn't hurt us. But for a radio station like this, it's not even the bandwidth; it's this legality of song costs.
Right.
Okay. So how can people
would be hit by, like, there's some like Pandora,
yeah,
where if they were hit with the actual charges that go into effect on July 15th, so only in a couple of weeks. The cost of paying the RIAA who's yeah. collecting, even if they're not playing songs that are covered by RIAA artists, it's any music that goes right. on the air. Their cost to the RIAA would be 150% of their operating costs. I mean, of their revenue, I should say.
So I have to say, if the geeks strongly support, support these radio stations, how can people support them? I mean, how to learn more?
At this point, it's legislation. To be able to curtail the RIAA from doing this type of price fixing. And the only way you're really going to get any traction with that is contacting your congressperson.
All right. Thank you, Miles, very much for that news. Sean, you want to do one more, or should we get into the tech?
I was just going to mention the iPhone came out yesterday. In
yeah.
case people didn't know, they weren't watching the news or checking out.
I was
out
really proud. I was listening to a podcast last week, and we didn't just go all over it. All the other tech podcasts I listened to, everybody covered the iPhone.
You know, I love...
We'll talk about it after we see it and play with it. That's what I feel. Yeah. But what are you going to say?
I was going to say Anand Lal Shimpi from Anand Tech.
What did he say?
He took one apart. He fully dissected an iPhone.
And
ruined it in the process.
Of course. We got it.
He said he did it, so we wouldn't have to. That's pretty funny. But everybody's been really curious about what the processor is.
And what is it?
It's a Samsung ARM processor.
Oh, ARM, okay.
Yeah.
That's not that surprising, actually.
So, you go to anandtech.com. They've got info. A lot of sites are talking about the iPhone. It should be interesting to see if it's really worth the cost.
You know, Andrew said he was going to go buy one.
Yeah.
So we'll have to have
him
on.
Ask him. You know, I heard Singular closed all their stores at 2 o'clock yesterday. Because you activate an iPhone through, I think, the iTunes interface. So I don't think they wanted people going to the store to do it.
Oh, I see. Right. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. With me in the air rooms are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and from the marketing manager for Sony, focusing on optical drives, Bob DeMoulin.
Yeah. You got it.
Yeah, I did it. joins us right now. Bob, thank you so much for suffering through my my destruction of your name and for coming to Santa Cruz.
Oh, good morning, Lyle. Great to be here.
And it's wonderful weather for you. I'm hoping you're going to enjoy the day on the coast. So, going down to Monterey?
Yes, I am going to Monterey.
Lovely. So, Sean's had a big, beautiful Sony high-definition television for a while. And one of the things that's been frustrating is not being able to listen to and watch really great content. And, of course, one of the reasons is the HD drives and the Blu-ray drives have been scarce. And so now you've just released kind of a great drive, a burnable drive and everything. Tell us a little bit about it.
So the product that Sean's been playing with is our Blu-ray disc rewritable drive. So it's the BWU-100A. You know, you got to love these crazy model numbers we come up with at these companies.
There's actually a really wonderful article that Sean just posted on GeekSpeak.org all about the drive. Kind of,
it's been out for about a year.
Oh, it has?
It was announced in July of last year.
Right. It's been shipping for a little while now, and it's doing pretty well. Of course, it's still early in the whole high-definition recordable market, as people are now just being exposed to players primarily. If you go to the Best Buy or wherever and buy a Blu-ray disc or an HD DVD player, or you get a PS3 game console, which also has a Blu-ray player built in. People are just now starting to experience the beauty of these movies in, full HD, full 1080i or 1080p, depending on your television. So now with this drive we have from Sony, now they can not only play back, but also record their own Blu-ray disc movies.
Well, the focus, from a geek's perspective, is this 25 gigabyte capacity, because, of course, sure, movies are cool and all, but storing all your data is a pretty great thing. So, Sean, you've been able to do that, just record a whole bunch of content onto the drive.
Yeah, I thought it was going to take a while, but it's a 2X drive, and it's got a 9 megabyte per second data rate.
So I was 25 able to, gigabytes, that's still
I was able
take
to,
some time.
Yeah, it's more like 23.2.
After it's formatted, yeah, that's right. About right. Yeah,
yeah, it took about 45 minutes. It wasn't bad at all.
What did you put on it?
Pictures.
Pictures?
Yeah, I figured, I didn't have a lot of media. So I was going to use it for definitely backing up stuff that I really worry about.
Yeah.
That's my height. I've got a digital camera, and I just backed up pictures. I think, they're about 14 meg in size, and I think I was able to put about 4,000 on a disc.
So the drive we're talking about, it's not like a VCR. It actually goes into a computer.
It's a standard half-height, 5.25-inch drive. It looks just like a DVD burner, and in fact, not only does it record Blu-ray discs, but also DVDs and CDs. And you just mentioned the 25-gigabyte disk, but there's also a 50-gigabyte dual-layer disk.
Whoa.
So that drive can today store up to 50 gigs on one disk, and it's single-sided. It's not double-sided. It's one side with two recording layers.
Nice. So this drive really is focused for people that are doing TV watching through their computer. Is that kind of your focal point, or is it for more data?
It's been an interesting mix thus far, and I will actually say the data applications are surprising us. There's a lot of people buying them to store data, because at 50 gigs, you're now talking about an entry-level tape drive. Entry-level, a lot of people are storing on tape, which is, which is fine. But they've come into the realization that actually storing on Blu-ray disc actually costs less than tape in most cases. It's non-contact technology, so it
doesn't have the wear,
and it's direct access.
It's
random access, right?
So what's the longevity like?
30-plus years versus a tape, after about 15, you're looking, you need to refresh that.
How do you test 30 years?
Yeah, how do you know that it's 30 years on a technology
we always have optical questions
like
about
6 months old?
Yeah.
They do it by putting the disc into an environmental chamber and exposing it to, humidity and heat for a period of time that would be equal to storing the disc, on a shelf, someplace in your office for 30 years and
basically,
be able to read out the data.
Time is not the danger here. The elements of time are
sure, the elements of time.
Humidity and
heat. Yeah,
sure.
Oxidation.
So you do a whole bunch of cycles like that, just like the way that all consumer stuff is tested. Your
right.
seats are not tested by people sitting them. Robots just do it really fast for a long time.
But
so
minimum 30 years. And they're talking about maybe quite a bit longer than that.
Is there some kind of, I've bought this disc, now I have some kind of contract? I mean, is that a warranty of 30 years? I mean, how do you say it's safe for 30 years?
Well,
is Sony liable for it? It can't be liable for that.
No recording media company puts any sort of warranties on the media, because it's very if you leave the thing out in the sun and it warps,
It's gone.
I mean,
sure.
And unfortunately, people do a lot of crazy things with recordable media.
The thing that happens to me now is I make my home movies and my kids then play with them, and that lasts about 15 minutes. So really, if you've got a 5-year-old playing with it, it's gone in less than 30 years.
Yeah, that is something I'm curious about. This isn't directly related to Blu-ray, but a wax cylinder. Back in the day, we're still listening to music that was recorded on a wax cylinder.
Right.
And we really don't have any media that can match that longevity at this point. Do you know if Sony or other companies are working on something that is really a true archival format that can last the length of time? Like, if you had something recorded on, say, a Blu-ray disc or a CD or any other technology, and that's where we recorded the Constitution. let's say there was a new revolution, there was a new constitution, 200 years from now, would we be able to read it like we could the current constitution?
The problem is actually the recordable media, an optical disc, for example, would probably actually last that long if you kept it in its case and you kept it away from sunlight and in a reasonable environment. The question then becomes, will there be playback hardware working in 200 years that will be able to read out that disc? That's really what it comes down to. It's not so much the recording media itself in many cases, unless it's magnetic-based. Magnetic-based, it's going to break down over time. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But optical media is actually very, very stable for a very long period of time if it's put away in its case and stuck on a shelf.
Paper, the written word's been around for thousands of years, right? We've got printed you've got documents that have lasted. And language has changed. It takes scholars to read this stuff now.
Yeah, it's true. Language do change a little slower than tech does. Let's talk a little bit about the drive and the technology. One of the things when the first sign of HD drives and Blu-ray drives were coming out, one of the concerns people had was, the Blu-ray, since they're going with a blue diode, you won't be able to use that blue diode to do the backwards compatibility of a DVD and a CD player because those use infrared light. So they're going to have two diodes in there, and therefore the cost is going to be more expensive, and so they're going to lose. That was like one of the projections early on. And there's been this whole, like, who's going to win the battle? Is it VHS and Betamax again? And I tend to think that it's probably not that drastic. But have you been able to handle having these two diodes in the machine, and how's that been from a perspective of packaging an affordable product?
Well, even when DVD players first came out back in, the late 1990s, they had two diodes in there as well. They had one for a 605 nanometer laser for the DVD and a 780 nanometer to read CDs. I mean, this is not necessarily something new, but in the drive that we have today, yes, we do have a blue-violet laser, 405 nanometers to read Blu-ray, and then we have another, red laser diode for CD and DVD. And it actually works very well. There will come a time when we can actually get to a single diode within the optical pickup that will do all three
without actually having multiple chips on the wafer of the diode, if you will.
Right. In fact, Sony, we just, from a component point of view, we just mass-produced a tri-mode laser diode.
That's what I saw. Yeah.
That's right. You talked about
pictures of
three-way.
I was telling you about that last night, yeah. So that's crazy. You've got one for CD, one for DVD, one for Blu-ray.
Yeah, all in one diode.
And all with one lens, which means it doesn't have to move the lens mount around.
Right, which is what we have in one of the pickups. We do have a sliding lens that does, change the wavelength between, CD and DVD. But yeah, that's a moving part. And of course, we all know with moving parts comes the possibility of it's going to break.
Well, the other concern was that, and this has been true for a while, when you look at the diode market, very small component level kind of stuff, blue and white lasers are more expensive than the rest of the line. If they come down in price, they used to be astronomically more expensive than the red diodes. And that just has to do with the materials that you need on the wafer to make the light a certain frequency. And that's been dropping steadily. But how much wattage are we talking in the blue laser to actually burn? Do you know?
Yes, I do. It's for a blue laser, to burn a Blu-ray disc, you're looking at about 50 milliwatts of power.
That's a bit.
Compared with about 16 to 20 for DVD. So it's quite a bit more. And you hit on a very interesting point, and that is that a blue laser diode does cost significantly more than a red laser diode. In fact, right now, a blue laser diode is the single most expensive component of that drive.
Yeah, I believe it. But from a physics perspective, you can see smaller things with blue. So when you're trying to compress a whole bunch of data onto a drive, a red laser, you can't get as much clarity you can't make the data as packed as blue.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why I was excited about it. It's like, well, it makes sense. You're going to step up and try to get more compression or more stuff in the disk. Is that why the blue was chosen? Or is it just because it's so cool to say Blu-ray?
No, just because you can get the laser spot size is five times smaller than a DVD. So you can pack five times as much information on a single disk. And beyond that, we're at two layers now, so we can get effectively 50 gigabytes per disk, single side. In the next couple of years, you're going to see that grow to 100. We can have up to four recording layers on a Blu-ray disc.
Right, because, of course, you can focus it easier, and therefore you can hit different layers by focusing it.
That's right.
Very cool stuff. This is Geek Speak on KOSP, supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
KUSP co-sponsors the 40th Annual Scottish Games and Celtic Festival. Wow, 40th annual. presented by the Scottish Society of the Monterey Peninsula. Enjoy the Mast Pipe Bands, Highland Dancing, Athletic Events, and Saturday Night Barbecue. The Scottish Games and Celtic Festival is July 7th and 8th at Toro Park on Highway 68 between Monterey and Salinas. For more information and tickets, please call 647-6311 or go online to MontereyScottGames.com. And that's Scott with one T. MontereyScottGames.com.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxel. The geeks this morning are, that was Sean Cleveland. We also have Miles Elam. We are talking about Blu-ray technology with Bob DeMoulin, and he is the marketing manager focused for the last 10 years on optical drive. So questions about any optical drive technology, I'm sure Bob's going to be able to handle. He's going to make us look like fools. So please give us a call. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's anywhere in California, 1-800-655-KUSP. Stay tuned this morning at 11 a.m. for Castle Cottage, coming up right after we go off air. Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. We are trying to stay on topic today with the calls. I think we have a lot to talk about with HD television content, any kind of optical questions you might have on drives and archiving, and in general, just talking to a pretty geeky guy from Sony. So give us a ring. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800, or toll-free anywhere in California, 1-800-655-KUSP. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. So, Bob,
I got a question.
You got a question? Okay.
Let's start with Blu-ray. It's not spelled B-L-U-E. It's B-L-U-Ray.
And it's actually Blu-ray disc, if you want to be really formal.
Okay. That's the trademark, huh?
Yes. Which was just BD. Everybody called it BD.
Yes, and that's very common. BD, Blu-ray disc, just even Blu-ray. It's all the same thing.
And okay.
It's a trademark.
It is. Blu-ray
B-L-U was trademarkable, but B-L-U-E ended up being more...
It becomes a generic word at that point, and you can't trademark generic words.
Right. Well, I think it's worked out really well. You got a logo that is very clear.
I think it's one of the things that's interesting is we're talking about Blu-ray, and there's this whole media hype about Blu-ray versus HD discs. And when we're talking, now I'm talking about HD content, you use the term HD, but in the disc market, you've got to say HD disc to be clarifying that there's two formats of optical.
Or HD DVD.
HD DVD is the way.
Yeah. In fact, if you talk about names, this gets pointed out a lot, is HD DVD sounds like it's a very easy for people to understand.
Yes.
It's HD on a DVD. I get it. Okay. Right, versus Blu-ray disc.
It's a better trademark, no offense. No, I'm sorry.
I'm sure if we could have grabbed it before
the other consortium
did, well, we would have.
The DVD forum. Yeah.
So why are there these two competing markets? Why do we have two things that are fighting? Why can't we love each other? I mean, what's going on here with these two things?
Well, there's different things come into play here. Blu-ray disc is backed by most of the people who were in the DVD market. So, Philips and Sony and, JVC and Pioneer and TDK and all these other companies who made DVD successful. And we learned something very, very important. And even this goes back into part of the Beta versus VHS. One of the reasons why VHS won out over Beta, even though Beta was technically a better technology, is that you could get a full 2-hour movie on a VHS cassette where you couldn't with Beta. Mm. It was a shorter tape. You couldn't get as much content. And there were many more studios bringing out content in the VHS format for that reason. Same thing kind of applies to HD DVD versus Blu-ray disc, because Blu-ray has more capacity. We can get a full 2-hour movie in 1080p.
If you use that analogy, though, you're saying that HD is better, has better technology, which
well,
is not what you're saying.
Well, not exactly saying that. In terms of being able to display a 1080p picture is the same between both technologies. It's like the old DVD plus and dash formats.
Sure.
They did the exact same thing. They stored the exact same amount of information. But in this case, Blu-ray disc, because it starts out at 50 gigs and has the ability to go to 100 gigs versus AC DVD, is 50 gigs, dual layer 30. So you're talking a 20 gig difference in capacity.
Right. Well, does that matter with a movie? Like, let's say a new release, kind of 2.5-hour movie even, that's at 1080p, so the largest you can get, plus some extras and stuff. Can both of them fit on either of these formats?
No.
And
that's the problem.
How big is a 2.5-hour 1080p film?
Depends on the encoding. I mean, just like with DVD with MPEG-2, MPEG-2 for Blu-ray disc or for HD DVD, they have several different bit rates that you can use. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, it's not just the movie and the soundtracks, it's also the interactivity.
And the second channel stuff. Like, you normally have a version in Spanish and English and French. I mean, that's not an uncommon thing.
You can have up to five or even eight languages if you want to, including multiple layers of soundtrack or
okay,
subtitles.
So if you're seeing, I mean, one of the things that I keep on saying because of the parallel with the plus and dash DVD recording is that eventually that is it didn't matter which one it was because all the players, like the first versions didn't play everything, but later on all the players played anything. It didn't really matter what kind you had. So what's going to happen in this market at some point? Are we going to have combined?
No. Unfortunately, the disc structure themselves are very, very different. And you can't, I mean, there has been one company, I believe it's LG, who actually announced a kind of a combo player that would play both HD DVD as well as Blu-ray disc, but at $1,200. I mean, who's going to pay for that?
It's basically two drives in one.
It's just too expensive.
So that's not going to happen, which means that one is going to win, one's going to lose, do you think?
That's kind of how we feel is going to happen. I mean, if you look at, you know, recently Blockbuster, for example, announced that they're only going to rent Blu-ray discs in their stores because that's what their customers are coming and asking for. If you look at all the companies that are behind Blu-ray, more importantly, look at the studios who are producing content. You know, most of them are doing, you know, Blu-ray and DVD or Blu-ray. Some of them are doing Blu-ray, HD DVD, and DVD, but you see a lot more titles available in Blu-ray disc than you do in HD DVD, and there's a reason for that. The studios don't want to be limited in how much content they can put on a disc. Blu-ray for them is just more flexible. It's got more capacity.
We'll see. Time will tell. Of course, let's go ahead and take a call from Big Sur. John, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. I had a question. You know, with all this new media going to disc, my biggest problem has been with my audio collections and my software is scratches. And what are the new Blu-ray discs costing now?
Depending where you buy them, you can get a 25-gigabyte disc for about $12 to $15 or a double-layer 50-gig disc for around $40 to $45.
What do you think the manufacturing costs or percentage of costs would cost to put those in a protective sleeve like they used to do?
Oh, like when the CDs first came out, they actually came in something. You never touched the media itself.
Yeah, DVD RAM.
Yeah, or even like, your MDs.
Yeah, it's a pretty common thing for weaker media. What about
I think Blu-ray
did. Why aren't we doing cartridges?
Blu-ray doesn't need it because there's actually what's called a hard coat layer on top of the recording layer, which actually makes it pretty
durable.
Pretty durable. In fact, the rule of thumb is you can actually take a nail or something and put a 2-inch scratch at any angle, anywhere on that disc, and you will not lose any data.
How deep a scratch? Not going through the disc.
Well, obviously not going all the way through the disc, but scratching the surface, if you will.
Okay. So the materials are getting tougher, but it's still a good point that, like, I do have CDs that I've lost to sitting on a shelf, and it slowly gets touched and it slowly, like, turns.
Hundreds of them.
Yeah, hundreds of little tiny scratches. Right. Are we going to see that kind of scratch on these discs?
Time will tell.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, DVDs or CDs never had a hard coat layer. Because blue laser media, and this applies to AC DVD as well as Blu-ray, is much more sensitive because in any given space you're packing five times as much data on one spot.
Right.
Well, isn't the fact that if it was covered, that would take almost all chances of a scratch getting on that disc? And seeing that we're storing so much data on one disc now, wouldn't it just make good archival sense to put it
in a case?
Yeah, it's interesting that Sony actually makes a technology called Professional Disc for Data, PDD, which is essentially a professional Blu-ray.
And it's in a cartridge.
And it's in a cartridge for that reason. But primarily it's because those devices are meant to be mounted in jukeboxes, where you've got robotics moving discs around very frequently. And therefore, they need to be a little more durable.
I've got to say that I'd be happier with... a couple things that the CD is interesting. My kids can't handle them effectively because their hands are too small. So they really can't pick up the CD or DVD or HD because they're all the same size, the Blu-ray as well. They can't pick it up very well without touching the inner side, and they try. But all of us kind of pick them up out of the tray, and then we have to put them somewhere, and we have to kind of, drop them. It seems to me that there should be better ways of handling this media. Of course, the recommended idea is you have an open case before you pick it out of your computer, you stick it in the case, and you close it, and then it's safe.
Well, I think the recommended thing is, it's just we're just not getting it because it's cheaper not to, and that's putting them in a case with a sliding door on them.
Well, I totally appreciate that idea, but at the same time, I carry around a lot of stuff, CDs and DVDs, in a zip case, and if I had to hold the plastic cartridge as well, that thing would be a box, and I don't want a box. I want it to be slim.
Isn't the whole idea behind this technology is it's going to be able to store so much on one you won't have to carry that much around?
The thing is, the content's getting larger, and I want to get into content, John. That's a great segue. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
That's the thing is, 25 gigs, a few years ago when Sean was reviewing DVD burners, and it was 4 gigs, and we were like, whoa, 25, 23 gigs, 50 gigs even, that seems giant. But now I'm making a lot of video, I'm doing a lot of photos, and actually I have get data like that. Miles, did you want to ask
me? Well, with regard to content, that actually reminds me. Where do you see the need for things like Blu-ray and HD DVD as we move toward, you know, the TiVoization, people having set-top boxes and getting movies on demand and having internet access get bigger, as opposed to, you know, shuffling discs around?
Right.
Well, as opposed to just, you know, saying, I want that one now.
Right. Well, two things are happening. Number one, of course, you know, being able to get video more freely. I mean, up until now, video's been kind of hard to move around on the web just because, well, they're big files. But now the bandwidth is increasing. Yeah, people can download, you know, a couple hundred megabyte video files. And that's standard definition. What about when high definition becomes more prevalent? And now you're talking about thousands, you know, of megabytes, you know, gigabytes, you know, for a file. Which, of course, well, your average, you know, DVD movie is between 4 and 8 gigabytes. A Blu-ray disc movie is going to be anywhere from 25 to 50 gigs. Yeah, the need for storage space is increasing. I mean, you've got half a terabyte hard drives now for about, what, $200 at Fry's?
Prices are really down. Yeah, and you can get USB, you know, drives, little discs for 16 gigs for $150.
Yeah, well, I mean,
prices are really going to start coming down.
I've got 120 gigs of photo data, right? And it sits on a hard drive, and I've got to back up another hard drive, and part of it's on a laptop. And it is I have to think about it all the time. I have to think about, okay, where's, like, we're going on a trip. Let's say we're going on a trip or something. And, well, both the drives are actually my house. Well, I should probably take one of the drives with me. Or that'd be dangerous because it's a hard drive. I mean, there's a concern of losing photographs that's pretty severe. So much so that Daria, the other day, my wife, goes, Lyle, we've got to make sure that the data's safe while we're gone. I'm like, what? Okay, so we're thinking about all the time. When you burn a disc, it's not like that. You know that disc is okay, and you burn two copies. So there is something about a static media equivalent to a book in some ways that you don't have to think about its safety.
But I guess you're talking about archival. I guess I was talking more along the lines of the general media, the other arms of Sony, for example, that do movies, that do production and distribution. And I think of cable today, where you have digital cable, and they have digital cable on demand. So you already have high-definition movies coming down.
Well, so here's the next thing is, I guess the thing that's going to really push this technology is, what about me having a high-definition video camera so I can record my kid's T-ball game? How that's the content stuff that starts going, okay, now I want to take that and share that high-definition quality and give it to Sean so he can play it on his home system. So are these cameras coming? I mean, I know Sony's a producer of these, so I know it's kind of outside of your
focus. Oh, they're here,
focus,
and they've been here for a couple of years.
Yeah, for more than my car.
Yeah, well, up until 2 years ago, I mean, we had the tape-based high-definition cameras, and they were still about $3,000. But now, for about $1,000, you can get a pretty decent, you know, high-definition camcorder that records on an internal hard drive because, you know, tapes and even discs, they just don't store enough. But at some point, you want to be able to, you know, take those memories and you've captured them in HD. You'll be able to want to watch them in HD, and as you point out, even share them in HD. Now, of course, there's several things that have to happen for that to really occur, and that is more people, you know, having high-definition capable television sets.
Which is kind of government-regulated to some degree because we're going to be losing analog, so you kind of have to upgrade, and almost all the new TVs that support digital are high-def.
Correct.
It's kind of happening.
It is happening.
Grandma's going to have an HD screen in 3 years.
Yeah, I would say the next 3 to 5 for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the adoption of HD television sets is becoming very big, but the other piece of it is having a device in the home that can play back one of these high-definition discs, whether it be HD DVD or Blu-ray disc.
Yeah.
Those need to happen as well. And that's not really projected to happen for the next year to year and a half before it really starts to get big, because right now those players are still up around $1,000. Sony recently introduced a second-generation Blu-ray player that's half that price. It's $499.
But, Miles, I totally see your point, because when CDs first came out, and I remember Sean was talking the first time he had burned a CD to his computer. You know, he'd copied, rather, ripped a CD, and how much time and effort and data it took up. I mean, the drives weren't big enough then.
Yeah, I had to do it in DOS.
And ouch. You had to, like, you know, encode the, I mean, you had a whole bunch of stuff
I
to do.
I worked at Meridian Data in Scotts Valley. We were one of the first producers of recordable.
I remember those guys.
Yeah, yeah. So, and it was the size of a VCR, the unit that hooked to my computer.
But you were able to copy the data off the WAV files off the CD and make an MP3. And at that point, the idea of making files that you would just share to a friend with a fob that hangs around your neck or email something or save it on your home computer was not really viable. And slowly as we progressed, of course, now I never load CDs anymore in anything. I use MP3s.
I remember reviewing CD drives and DVD drives and trying to come up with the amount of data to fit on a disc so I could test burn time. Remember, that was the issue. Like, where am I going to find 4.7? I was getting together MP3 files. Well, this is when it was brand new, right? In the late 90s. There's a lot of people didn't have this stuff. So I was gathering everybody's MP3 collection, and I finally made something big enough. I think there were a bunch of stuff that was copied just to duplicate and make space.
Make copied folders.
So and now we come out with a 25, 50 gig disc. I have no problem putting data on that. I mean, the internet revolution has just really, data is growing. The amount of data that needs to be saved.
Yeah.
It's just going to, I think, exponentially increase. And I don't think technology is going to keep up with it.
And kind of my point is that, you know, my sister's like a musician. She sings. And I recorded that and I mixed it on my computer and stuff. And I made MP3s. And I listened to it on my iPod or whatever, and my computer through MP3s. But when I want to give it to my mother, I burn a traditional CD. So that media is very, that type of media is very viable for sharing.
So now I'm still reeling from the concept that's been seated now of a video camera that has a 500 gig hard drive in it.
It's
or
got to.
Larger. Yeah, it has to.
Yeah.
In order to have the raw content.
It's
for
a
you to downcode or you know, to
well, actually, now they only have 30 or 60 gigabyte drives. But you know, in the future, yeah, they're going to have to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
In order to handle a 50 gig disk, you're going to have. I mean, unless you want to swap out and
right now,
constantly transfer.
Miles, it's great. I spent some time in the Digital Media Factory, which is over in the old Wrigley's building in Santa Cruz, and they're doing a whole bunch of HD. And they actually have some Sony cameras, I believe. And they're doing they have cards, you know, P2 cards, which are like computer. I mean, PC cards that have data on them, and they have to, while they're recording, somebody has to go and pull one of them and stick a new one in, and the camera keeps going because there's two, to go offload it, because the data is so much data, you can't fit it on the camera. And this is a major issue in the whole production line. The reason why UCSC's film department has taken some time in doing HD is not that the cameras were costly, but the entire product line of trying to deal with
HD
content.
Well, in a studio
content.
Environment, can't you just hook it up to your computer and record directly to the computer?
You could, but consider that when you have a Blu-ray disc like a DVD, you're talking about compressed video.
Yeah, that's
true. The raw video coming off these HD cams is hundreds of megabytes per minute. Hundreds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to get it into a medium that you can, a disc that you can actually take and stick in a player, it's got to be, very highly compressed.
And there are, in studio, like this, the Digital Media Factory is dealing with over-the-wire transmission to a mixer that records one of the three cameras, and each of the cameras has backup. But the point is that it's hard to deal with, and for a home user, it's even more difficult. So
then the CPU power to deal with that level of video.
And of course, when you're most of the time when you're taping, you're not next to your computer. You're in.
What is the minimum system requirement for dealing with HD editing HD video?
You're looking at a dual core P4.
Wow.
As a minimum.
Real time.
Yeah.
So what's on the market right now for me to go buy an HD camera? Is it still too pricey?
Like I said, for about $1,000, you can get a pretty decent high definition camcorder that's hard drive based. They still make the tape based ones or even DVD based ones, but you wouldn't want that necessarily because they just don't store very much. If you're going to go on vacation, I would say hard drive based ones are the best because you've got 10 hours for, let's say, of continuous shooting.
Of 720p.
Or 1080. Well, 1080, you're even
hard
less.
Yeah.
Now, do you really notice the difference between 720p and 1080p?
Yes. It's a very big difference, actually.
On a big screen? It says the thing, I haven't had a chance to really test that. And people at my work have complained about that. They just don't see a difference. Like, I guess what they're saying is they don't see a reason to upgrade their TV. So maybe they're just placating themselves, but I'm just wondering, can you really do see a difference?
Yeah, and I'm gonna give you an illustration here. That movie Night at the Museum that just recently came out on DVD as well as Blu-ray disc, and I watched it on my old plasma in DVD, and I recently upgraded to a Sony 46 inch TV that and a Blu-ray player with HDMI. Same movie, Okay, the Plasma was a set, and even when I hooked the Blu-ray player up to the old Plasma, but just used component, and the best you can get out of that's going to be 720. And then looked at it in 1080p, you know, connected through HDMI, was a night and day difference.
It's an interesting movie to choose because, of course, there's miniature people in the background in that movie. So can you see their expressions?
I mean, it's amazing the level of detail that you can see in 1080p. Yeah. But there again, a lot of the films that were created that were not produced for 1080p don't take advantage of all the features of 1080p.
That's true.
But when you see something that was really created for and distributed in 1080p and you see it in an environment set up for it, it's a remarkable difference.
I got Fifth Element on Blu-ray. And I already owned Fifth Element, the Superbit DVD version.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this is like the best of the DVDs.
And then on the same TV, you're able to watch them, right?
Yeah, because I'm running a Media Center PC. And with the Sony Drive that you guys loaned me for a month, I'm so sad I have to send it back. So it's night and day. I just couldn't believe it. And it's in the clarity of the lines. The sky effects, I see more like emulsion on the DVD.
Right.
And on the Blu-ray, I don't. It just looks like a photograph. It's beautiful. And then I rented Road Warrior, Mel Gibson's Road Warrior.
Good,
you know?
Film.
And I'm wondering, what can they possibly do to such an old movie to make it playable in HD, right? Because this was recorded on old film stock, and they had to do using new technology, they had to transfer it to Blu-ray and then somehow make it look, you know, 1080p quality.
Except they were recording it in film.
Yeah. Film's got that resolution.
I just didn't expect it was jaw-dropping. Just,
you know,
how beautiful.
Sean,
it
one
looked.
Of the things I got from seeing your HD camera, your HD screen, is that, oh, well, my photographs, because I do a lot of photography, those are HD resolution sizes. Of course, they're still. And you can actually see a lot. I mean, seeing a good photograph versus a small resolution photograph, it's a very different experience.
That would be a good comparison right there.
Let's do a
standard photograph against an 8-megapixel, 12-megapixel digital camera photograph. Yeah, big
definitely.
Difference in the resolution.
All right, we're going to take a call. We are taking with calls about optical, Blu-ray, HD, all that stuff. The phone numbers are 476-2800, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We are speaking with Bob DeMoulin. He is the marketing manager at Sony, focused on optical technology, and we're going to take a call right now from Santa Cruz. Hal, welcome to Geek Speak. Hello, Hal, welcome.
Hi, my question is kind of philosophical. Obviously, the quality that can be attained as you get to higher and higher resolution is valuable, and perhaps for art or even for the consumer, highly desirable, but where does it all end? I heard the use of the word exponential. You know, we're getting, you know, faster and more. And to kind of put it metaphorically, we want to store all this stuff on very small things so we can have them forever and take them with us. Do we want to take our house with us when we go on vacation, as a sort of metaphorical question? And in an era of carbon limits, which is coming, and energy restrictions, what does that say about where we're going with all this?
Okay, food for thought. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions for us other than that? Because it's a pretty big thing to chew.
Well, is anybody stopping and thinking about, do we just do everything we can because we can, and then it makes things obsolete? I mean, the iPhone's obsolete. It just came out last night.
I don't think it's obsolete yet. It's got another month.
Okay.
With regard to the carbon limits, I would think that, in the grand scheme of things, HD video and keeping your content around and having it on a disc is absolutely minuscule compared to driving your car 20 miles in terms of a carbon footprint.
Well, except that if you're going to send that disc to somebody,
you know, we did a news story about Blu-ray discs being more green than HD DVD.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah.
No, but this
technical
quality
to do with
enables the 42-inch plasma TV to be of use.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
And so the screens get bigger and bigger, and they take more and more energy. And, you know, my screens have gotten bigger over the 25 years I've been...
Well, you know, actually, interesting enough, a lot of the newer technology reduces the... Like the LCD versus the CRT, that step was a downgrade.
Okay, but then we get bigger and bigger LCD.
That's true. Yeah, and at the same time, I have...
But it's still better than a CRT tube, right?
Sure. Okay,
even technology improves for the exact same item. For example, I have a new MacBook Pro that has an LED backlight, which means it's not doesn't have any mercury in it right. like the previous ones did, and it uses less power for the same screen size.
And Hal, I think how much is too much is definitely a question everybody has to ask, and I appreciate you bringing it up. Thank you for the call.
Okay, thank you, guys.
From Salinas, Boyd, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, Boyd.
Yes.
Welcome to GeekSpeak. What's your question today?
How you doing?
Hi.
Really, it's to your guest about, you know, Blu-ray and HD, which one wins. And as a manufacturing engineer, I wonder about the cogs of manufacturing discs, where my understanding is HD discs, the manufacturers can stamp out of the dime a dozen, versus Blu-ray, they are a very expensive manufacturer, and why would a worldwide supplier want to pick up that higher manufacturing cost?
Is that true? I mean, I hadn't heard that.
So. Boyd brings up probably one of the only legs HD-DVD really has to stand on these days, which is the fact that for manufacturers to create an HD-DVD disc, there's very minor changes required in the manufacturing plant to be able to stamp them out, whereas Blu-ray, as you pointed out, it's a whole different disc. But again, it comes back to what does the consumer want? Do they want to have their content limited?
Well,
because they can only stick so much on that disc.
This process of pressing a new type of disc, is it expensive because there's so many DVD fabs that can press discs that can also do HD discs, and there just aren't the same type of fabs, or is the process inherently more expensive? Is there some kind of step in there that uses a chemical or something that is more expensive?
No, it's just a factor of volume.
Yeah,
there just aren't enough Blu-ray discs being made yet.
But this is done in all fabs, even for microprocessors. Every time you shrink a fab process, you have to bring in all new equipment.
Right. And that's just a very expensive process, taking that step.
It is expensive. But
once
know.
It's taken, it's equivalent. I mean, there's not much difference. The retooling, that's the cost.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the retooling because the processes are actually extremely similar.
So all these companies in the forum that you're a part of, Sony's a part of, have gambled that process, though it's a step, you'll succeed at it, and at some point we'll have a lot of Blu-ray fabs.
Yes.
And the costs are high also, I think, to pay for the initial investments. But at some point, it is in everybody's interest to bring those costs down to increase volume because that's where you really make your money, right?
Well, that's right, of course.
So it's just like that microprocessing, too. You know, if you want the fastest, you're going to pay for it. But at some point, those chip costs are going to come down as newer ones come out, and they can create more of those chips.
So right now, it's still just an assumption that in the future it will come down.
It's already coming down now, actually. I mean, as more and more, you know, studios are now producing Blu-ray discs, it is coming down significantly.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxell. We've had Bob DeMoulin on from Sony talking about Blu-ray technology. Thank you so much, Bob, for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you also for hooking up a drive to test. It's been great to see this in action, and so I really appreciate the loan. And Sean, thanks so much for taking the time to write that wonderful article up on our site. If you want to learn more about Sony Blu-ray discs, go ahead and go to geekspeak.org. Miles, you had something for...
Just another reminder about the internet radio... upcoming
legislation
changes that are
sure.
made for it, the royalties that are going into effect. There is a link on the KOSP homepage with regard to this, and there is some legislation being drafted in Congress. Thank you, Judith from Watsonville, for bringing this up. The Internet Radio Equality Act, there's a Senate version and a House version. You can find out more information at www.savenetradio.org, and we'll put that up on the website.
Thank you, Miles. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Ardo, on the web at kusp.org. I thank everybody for participating.